Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines. Plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines. All on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
None of that ever happened. What it was a friend of mine mentioned one day, said, "Hey, dude, I think I could get you an audition." And in that conversation, I said to him, "Hey, I heard Foo Fighters are looking for a guitar player." And he actually did wind up getting my name thrown in the hat.
Episode 385, Chris Shiflett, solo artist, but also lead guitarist for Foo Fighters. Punk rock veteran. I mean, the guy's done it all. I think we could have done 2 different episodes. One of him just talking about the music that he likes and creates, and one of him just talking about Foo Fighters. I mean, it's funny to hear him talk about the difference in touring, like when he's by himself versus when he's with Foo Fighters.
Yeah, what a crazy difference.
And how one of them is wildly rich, and one of them is a solo artist. You know, still trying to make it, figure it out. But I really like Chris Shiflett. I liked him more than I thought I would. Not that I didn't think I would like him, but usually when guys come in from L.A. or New York, they just feel a bit different, even if not purposefully. I thought he was awesome, didn't you?
He was really nice, yeah.
Just like chill, walked in. Because you don't know. He plays hundreds of thousands of people with Foo Fighters. Like, he's one of the faces of Foo Fighters. So I thought it was super cool that he came over because he was playing a show in town at the Ryman with, who was it?
Blackberry Smoke.
Got it. So he's got a song called Black Top White Lines. Just came out. Here it is. Go ahead. You hit that. So and he recorded it in Nashville. He wrote it with Jaron Johnston of Cadillac 3 and John Osborne of Brothers Osborne. And so we talk about a lot of stuff, including Foo Fighters, growing up in California, his family, and, you know, just life as a dad and also as a rock star. So you can follow him on Instagram at Shifty71. Mike, what was your biggest takeaway from this interview?
I love anytime he talked about the punk rock stuff. Like, that's what I knew him for, like, before Foo Fighters.
So you did know. I didn't know if you knew him before or you learned that he was in those groups in the past.
No, the band he was in, No East for a Name, I've seen them live before, like after he left the band, but one of my favorite bands growing up.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang, you really were into it then, huh?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Like, Foo Fighters are one of my favorite bands of all time, so it was super cool. Here he is, Chris Shiflett.
I'm just genuinely interested in, for example, you and your career. Like, I have just been a fan of different things that you have done. So people come to my house when I'm really interested and we'll do an hour. And then this gets put on in a lot of places.
Right.
This Lives as a podcast. It does, you know, 7-figure streams. Then I put it on other shows. So the answer is it's a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes I was at the doctor a little bit ago because I got a sinus infection, which, you know, when you get something here or here and you have to even sing because, you know, you're doing your stuff now.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a ball player having a hurt ankle.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how much, like, when you're, because, you know, I've historically been the guitar player in a band for most of my, you know, adult playing life. And when I'm out doing my own shows, even this week, I mean, I'm doing one show this week. I'm just coming out here to play at the Ryman. And that's the only gig. But, like, both my kids were sick this week. And all week long leading into this, I was like, don't hug me.
I know. I mean, that's the life that I live, is where I'm always worried I'm going to get sick.
Yeah.
And I think it's where the germaphobe part of me started. I come from a very humble upbringing, and so I have to show up to work. I always had to show up to work.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, if I get sick, I can't work. And if I can't work, I'm going to... And I still deal with a lot of that now.
Yeah.
But to answer the question, I like you, and that's why you're here. Otherwise, we'd have done it at the studio for 10 minutes, and it'd have been a thing. But I probably do 5, 10, 15, 20. This, I do a sports show, just audio-wise, 30 hours of content a week.
Wow.
Which gets to be... A lot. That's why I don't lie that much, because I can't remember.
Right.
Or I would. I would just do some.
I thought my 45-minute podcast that I do like once every, 2 weeks felt like a lot.
Well, it is. I'm like a marathon runner, though.
Yeah.
We train all the time. That's what you do. Yeah. You go and you do it. You know, for me, I was thinking about you when I was coming over here. My point was, I left the doctor a second ago, and I have nothing wrong with me except like a week and a half ago, I had a sinus infection that had developed from a cold, and I just couldn't get rid of this last lingering cough thing. It just stays for like 2 months, right? And so I go, and he says, yeah, nothing wrong with you. It's just one of those where your bronchial stuff is all inflamed, and so they put me on this little machine, and you're like, it's like you're smoking a clear pipe of health, and foam steam's coming out of it. And he says, you're going to be a little like, lightheaded and jittery when you leave this. And I'm like, I'm all right. I left the doctor like this. Just jittery as crap. So I'm pretty high.
So we might get into some strange territory.
Who knows where we're going to go? Yeah. That was my point here.
Good. Hey, cool.
So
let's go.
First, it's super cool to have you here.
Thank you.
I'll geek out on that part for a minute. Just super cool to have you here. Been a big Foo Fighter guy, always, like my whole life. And so I've known you. And when you become a big fan, you start to not be a fan of just the songs or just the lead singer, but how the different entities came in and developed. And so I'm very familiar with your story and super cool you're doing your thing now. And I would definitely want to talk about the fulfillment there and just the life that you've lived. And as I was kind of getting ready for this and thinking about you were coming, I spent the last week in California. I went over and hosted some red carpet stuff for the Emmys and just some whatever. And I lost track of what day it was. Meaning, is that Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday? And I live in a space where I've got to know what day it is all the time because I'm on the air Monday through Friday and I'm touring, I'm traveling, I got to know. But I wonder, the lifestyle that you have lived traveling so much, do days even matter for the most part?
I think that there was a time maybe when I was younger when I just didn't pay attention that much to what day of the week it was. And
did a Wednesday matter versus a Friday?
Well, it matters when you're, when you're in a band and you got to play on a Tuesday night somewhere, and those are always like the weaker gigs, And I'm thinking more like before I was in the Foo Fighters, when I was in a band called New Year's for Name. And so you pay attention in that sense. But I think like having kids, and my kids are pretty grown now, so it's been a long time, but that made me turn back into like a Monday, paying attention to Monday through Friday a little bit more in that sense.
It was tough for me because I live on such a regimented,
I'm pretty regimented too. I mean, to be honest, like in order to do like, I got a lot of balls in the air all the time. So my life is pretty compartmentalized and it kind of has to be, I got to be dad first thing in the morning. I got to get my kids off to school. And then I have like a few hours where I can sort of do the stuff that I need to do for me.
You a big calendar guy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like everything in?
Oh, yeah. I know 100%. Or I just, ask Shane, my manager, or I forget entirely. And then he's calling me like, dude, you getting on that interview or what? Especially if we're in the middle of like Foo Fighters stuff, then that's going to take up. That's like your whole life, So you're trying to fit these things sort of in the margins here and there. So I gotta be. It always drives me nuts when I'm dealing with people who are like living loose, that aren't paying attention to that. I'm talking to you, musicians.
Yeah, really. I mean, creatives.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Where you're like, dude, I got like 45 minutes right now. Like, we gotta go.
It's been hard because I do a lot of different things and none of them great. I do a lot of things pretty well, but Ryan Seacrest, who I became friends with. I worked on American Idol for 4 seasons, working with the contestants on picking songs, how to sing, that kind of stuff. I was on camera for 4 years there working with them. And he said to me once, he said, "Hey, look, people have to learn to respect your calendar." I was like, "What does that mean?" He goes, "If you say you got to go at 4, you leave at 4 and they'll never again question it." And so I was going to ask you how you're juggling this, because I do want to get and have a lot of things to talk about your new project. But I was like, dang, that's pretty good. Like, it's precedent. We have a meeting. I got to go at 3. I'm going to show up on time. And then I got to go at 3. Okay, it's 3. I got to go. And they'll never question you again. Now, when you got a lot of money like Ryan, I think it's a little easier to walk out of that.
Sure.
But I thought it was great advice.
Yeah.
And with what you're doing now, and can we have a clip of Black Top, White Lines, please?
Yep.
So you wrote this song with two of my friends, which is pretty freaking cool.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
Yeah, so Jaren and John.
Yeah.
Those are like my dudes. I love them. And
great dudes.
And when I hear you, they are great dudes.
Yeah.
Like, just as humans, the best.
And great musicians. And I got to say, Jaren was like really knocked it out of the park producing this record.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about the production of it. Because when I hear this, because I'm big Cadillac 3, like, I grew up in the South, so I grew up being kind of forced and then eventually loved like real Southern rock, but also soul. Southern rock, the tone, guitar tone a bit. And when I hear this, I can definitely hear some of that Jaren production influence.
Well, that riff, the main riff of the song, that is Jaren all day long. He came into it because we were going to get together to write, and we were doing it over Zoom because it was like during the lockdown or whatever. And before we jumped on there, he was like, "Hey, man, you know, is it cool if John Osborne joins?" I was like, "Yeah, of course."
John was probably nervously waiting, like, "Okay, man, just let me know if he lets me into this." Oh, God. It's cool if he doesn't. It's cool.
Probably not. Yeah. Probably. but I was stoked. Yeah, it was like, you know, made it that much better. And but Jaren brought that riff into it. You know what I mean? Then we kind of wrote the song around that.
Mike, will you hit that again for me? So when you're putting out, and you're the face now, it's you. It's you now. It's just your name. It's your face. No band, by the way. I mean, you have a band, but it's you.
Yeah, you know, and I'll tell you the reason why. I didn't do that for a very long time. When I was a little younger, I intentionally, even stuff that was basically like a solo project. Like, I had a band called Jackson United that was, you know, legitimately a band here and there, but with a bunch of different lineups. And then I was, when I first started doing some kind of more like Americana flavored stuff, I had a band called Chris Shiflett and the Dead Peasants. And I just found like every time I would go to make a record, every time I would go to do some shows, it would always be different people, because you can't really keep a full-time band together when you're in a full-time band. You know what I mean? It just doesn't work.
Unless you want to pay him a salary just to hang, and you don't want to do that.
That ain't an option. Yeah. But yeah, so I finally just kind of like, you know, like grudgingly just make it my own name, you know what I mean? Like, but it's interesting because with each record and then with each like tour, like, you know, groups of shows we do, you do have these moments of like, you know, like the group of musicians that played on my new record, it's consistent for the most part all the way through, you know, all 10 songs. There's a little bit of change here and there. And all those cats make a massive impact. So it's like it's like having this little mini band relationship for a couple of sessions, you know?
Yeah, and I guess my point with saying it's just you is, okay, Dead Peasants, it's still you. I mean, a lot of artists, Tom Petty had the Heartbreakers. We could go through all the people who had great bands with them as well. But this sound that you're making is just you. This is just your sound now. Jack White can do... And we can go through all the different versions that he does. And they all slightly have a different sound. It could be Jack. But this is just you. And so you have to decide who your presentation of you by yourself, tone is.
Yeah.
Do you think about that? Or are you just like, man, let's just make some music and see what happens?
I mean, I think about it a little bit. Like, one of the first conversations we had when I asked Jaren if he would produce produce this record was we had the conversation about like kind of pushing me into unknown territory, or, you know, sort of sonic territory that was maybe a little uncomfortable or something I hadn't done before. And like, this first song was definitely
we definitely went there.
What, you know? Sonically, because it sounds so natural, because I know those guys and I know you, but what sonically to you, I don't want to use the word hesitant, but what sonically to you made you kind of wade in a little slower because you weren't that accustomed? Is it the tone? Is it the?
Yeah, it's just maybe an overall gloss on the whole thing or something. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's probably more in my head than anybody else. Like, it's funny because as a musician, you tend to just overthink everything. I know I do. I always do. And overthink how it's going to be received and all that sort of stuff. So, and the song's not out yet, so I guess we'll find out pretty soon.
By the time this airs, it'll be out.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah, cool. But you know, the response so far in the little snippets that I put up, like, there hasn't been one comment on my Instagram that's like, this sounds like a radical departure for you. You know what I mean? So I think that's stuff that, like, we think about more than anybody else. I think most people just listen to music. They just take it as it comes. You know, do I like this or do I not? Does this make me want to dance? Does it make me happy? Does it make me sad? I don't think most people sit there and think about production elements and all that kind of, you know, that maybe the musicians think about, and the difference between this type of, you know, what a rootsy Americana sound is versus a slicker, more kind of like, you know, radio friendly, you know, all that kind of stuff. I just don't think people, the average listener, just doesn't care.
And they don't. And when you said gloss, I don't, you know, this is me and you, and I've heard that song a bunch. I don't really hear gloss. That's not either a compliment or it's nothing, except I don't hear gloss. I just hear a slight pivot that feels like the narrative's a little more honest.
Interesting.
And again, that's just, there's no real definition of art.
Yeah, yeah.
But it feels like your narrative feels a little grittier. And I don't hear gloss at all.
Well, that's good to hear. Maybe gloss was the wrong word, but, like, you know,
I use all wrong words. So I mean,
yeah, but you know, like, I do think that this record, when you kind of add it all up, it's got like, and I feel like I edge closer to this maybe with every solo record I do, which is more and more kind of all of my musical influences represented, the big ones at least. You know, the Stones and
sure.
Whatever, Bad Religion or Jawbreaker or something mixed with, you know, Merle Haggard and Buck Owens. You know, like, it's kind of all in there.
Diver. You
know? The Eagles, ZZ Top, whatever it is, you know, it's just kind of, it's all in there.
You ever be so influenced, and I'm not, and this is not the same thing as, because I'm a comedy and I definitely don't steal jokes on purpose, but there are times where I write things that are similar to other people because we have like-minded sensibilities and age.
Sure.
So this is not that type of question, but it's, do you ever feel like you're so influenced by an era of the Eagles and you've written this song and you're like, man, I just hear like 70s Eagles so much that I can't stop hearing the Eagles from the 70s. Not specifically a song, but like you were so encapsulated by whatever that motivation was when you wrote that song that you're like, man, this might be a little too much Motley Crue.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but like I kind of feel like it's usually the opposite. Mm. It's the thing that you think you're like, wow, that's a little close to the bone. You know, like maybe that's, you know, a little too much borrowing, a little too much influence, is like, then other people hear it totally differently, you know? Because I think that is a big part of music. I think we're all borrowing from the people that we grew up listening to or whatever, or even just the current stuff. And but then you put it through your filter and it becomes this different thing.
You like being the front guy? You like singing?
I do like singing.
Let me ask it again. Do you love singing?
I came to singing late, you know, versus playing guitar. I mean, that's an interesting question because it's something that slowly I've gotten more and more comfortable doing. And even in writing, used to sort of view writing the lyrics and stuff as almost kind of an afterthought. And whereas that's more like front and center to me now as when I'm writing. But, I would love to someday be able to sing with as much ease and sort of like, I don't know, just the kind of like not even thinking about it thing that I feel like I do with guitar playing. I don't think I'm there as a singer. You know what I mean? I still got to like work at it. Yeah, but I like it and I enjoy it and it's fun. You know, and it's fun to like, to even just playing live, like to see what kind of works and doesn't work and putting a show together and
putting
and just kind of interacting with the crowd. You know, it's that weird
thing that, like, it's hard to even put your finger on. You know, sometimes you just feel like you're so connected to the crowd, and sometimes you feel like there's this wall between you. And you know what I mean? And to try to, like, you know, sometimes after shows, like, God, why did that feel so good tonight? You know, why was that spark there with everybody in at the bar or whatever? You know what I mean? And
have you found a difference in exactly that, the sentiment you're making there? Have you found a difference in being the front guy and technically how your stage is set up? Meaning, if I do comedy music, I can't wear ears because I have to hear laughs.
Right.
If I'm doing just music, and we're part, I have to wear ears so I can hear. And so there are for different reasons, monitors versus, have you found that being that guy up front, now technically, you have had to rethink how the stage is set up or how it's technically coming to you?
Well, I am a recent in-ears convert.
So you haven't worn ears forever?
No, I was earplugs for a long time, but I'm just sort of recently started, especially with
singing.
But earplugs singing.
With sound. You're saying not
well,
just
like those molded earplugs. Okay. No, with no sound, which is the worst thing for a guitar player.
Wait a minute,
takes out all the high end. It's annoying, but
you can
to
still hear.
Oh, you can still hear. Yeah, but it's like, you know, those molded earplugs that
they're literal earplugs. Okay, you got to talk. Take it down for me, level.
Okay,
I'm dumb at this. So I wear ears to do my radio show because it's also visual, but you can't see. They're not the molded ears,
right?
But they're plugs, but I can hear everything. Now you're saying
I'm talking
plugs.
Just straight ear plugs.
Why would you plug your ears?
To save my, because I spent so, do you know how many years I spent in little garages?
I hear you, but you don't need to hear everybody
with the
else.
Cymbals right here just going, like, I remember I went to go get my hearing checked like probably 15 years ago, and it was not too long after we first started having kids, and the doctor just freaked me out. He's like, yeah, you don't care now, but you know, when you're my age and you can't hear your grandchildren or, you know, you're going to care. And I was like, get me the thickest earplugs possible. But no, now I use in-ears, you know, yeah. Like what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And for, God, that's the greatest thing ever for singing.
I mean, yeah, it just sounds like. And you don't blow your voice out.
You don't blow your voice out. Yeah. It just sounds like you're singing in your head. You know, it's the best.
So, okay, you got to help me out on.
Because I was never really comfortable with loud monitors on stage.
But how do you hear the bass? Are you just running like a metronome in your, I mean, what are you doing if you're playing with earplugs? I'm not getting it. I'm dumb right now, Chris.
You know what you're doing? You're overcompensating and just turning your amp up. That's what you're doing. So it probably amounts to the same thing.
Okay. So yeah. You can still hear vocals.
Oh, yeah. Well, you get there's the fancy molded ones that have like little different caps where you can, you know, bring it down 10 dB.
But in the plugs that you're wearing?
Well, the ones that I used to wear.
Yeah. That's,
yeah, yeah.
I never even heard of that.
Oh, hey. Yeah.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines. Plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines. All on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
You started playing guitar at what age?
11.
Do you feel like you're someone who music came to... I don't think there's a such thing as easy, but more naturally, did you understand it quicker?
I wouldn't say that. I think I was lucky that I grew up in a family of musicians. You know, both my older brothers played and played really well and were like really good by the time I ever picked up a guitar, which was probably a little daunting. And I was a terrible student.
It wasn't real, like, as a guitar student, I would just never really practice what I was supposed to practice and all that sort of thing. And, like, you know, this was, like, the early 1980s, so, and I was listening to people like Yngwie Malmsteen and stuff, so I remember, like, everyone would talk about, oh, you have to take classical guitar lessons, because that's what Yngwie did, or that's what Uli John Roth did, or all these guys that we all looked up to. And so I was a little kid, and I would go take classical guitar lessons. I could not figure out how that connected to, like, the Ozzy Osbourne records. I was, it just didn't make any sense, and so I just wouldn't play it, you know?
What's classical?
And it wasn't until I started playing in bands in high school, that's when I started, when I started to get, like, you know, more fluid.
Sure. But what's classical guitar? I know classical piano, but what do you learn at a classical guitar lesson?
I didn't learn anything.
What are you supposed to learn? Do you learn, like,
well, are you supposed notes? To learn how to read music, which I could never really do. And, like, you know, it's a lot of finger style, you know, like, you know, beautiful. It's almost like a level of discipline that I wasn't recognizing in the heavy metal music that I was listening to. Couldn't figure out how that became that. And I just wanted it to be that, you know?
As you have two brothers that are both playing guitar, how come you didn't get stuck with the bass? Usually
my brother Mike started playing guitar, then my brother Scott started playing bass. So he was like
a bassist. So he got it then, okay.
He did, but he also just, you know, took my brother Mike's guitar and figured out how to play that thing better than all the rest of us, you know? So he kind of did it all.
You get drums, you're Hanson. If they just give you drums, all of a sudden.
I know. Well, I'll tell you, because my older brothers were guitar and bass, respectively, my first choice was piano. I was going to be a keyboardist. And then my mom even bought me a piano, and then I didn't take those lessons either. So I just had to pick up the guitar. It just had to be that. You know, that was the era. It seemed like the guitar player in all those bands was always the person that I was drawn to.
Born and raised in California?
Yeah.
Like Beach, California?
Yeah, oh yeah. Santa Barbara.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
Surf, California?
I mean, I actually came to surfing kind of late, you know, relative to a lot of other people. But I mean, I grew up at the beach anyway, so. Skateboarding and what a boogie. I'm a little embarrassed to admit that when I was a kid, I was a boogie boarder. It's a sponger.
Is that the thing on your knees?
Not on your knees, but no. Like, you know, the moray boogie, you know?
I grew up in Arkansas, so I don't have any, I don't even like the beach because I don't get it. Yeah. It's only because I was never around it. Like, my friends that grew up either going on vacation to beaches or they love it. And I'm like, what do I do? I just sit there.
Yeah, that's eventually you pick up a surfboard and then it opens up that whole thing.
Then I tear an ACL at this age.
Yeah.
I've never even been skiing because I'm so afraid to go tear an ACL at this point.
Yeah.
I'm scared of everything.
No. Well, that's, it could happen.
That is.
It's dangerous.
You are.
And then there's the sharks.
Yeah, that doesn't scare me. I've done shows on Nat Geo. Those animals, I'm all good. We're good. I'm Dr. Doolittle. I'm freaking Dr. Doolittle out there. They don't hit me. Can't tear an ACL with a shark.
Well,
tear my head off, then I'll die. I won't even know it. You have two brothers. You have any other siblings?
I have a stepbrother.
Okay.
who was around a lot too.
Music at all?
He played a little bit, but not. But he was more of a musical influence just because of what he was listening to, and you know, just bringing that to it.
Mom and dad, were they together?
They were not.
And
yeah.
Did you know? I didn't know my dad at all. He left, so. Did you know your mom and dad?
Yeah, so my mom and dad were together. I was born in Santa Barbara. My dad got a job out in Maryland, so we all moved out to Maryland. That's when I was real little.
The state. Do you move all the way across?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then my parents separated. My mom moved back to Santa Barbara. So then there was a few years where we were bouncing back and forth. Like, we'd be in Maryland for a little bit, then we'd come out to Santa Barbara, back and forth, until my mom finally got custody of us full time. And then my dad stayed out there, and, you know, sadly now, because my dad passed away when I was, around 28 or something, and I never lived in the same town as him again from the time that I was six.
After they split?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he moved back to California eventually, but he was a couple hours up the coast, so.
Did you ever do the drive all the way across?
No, but there was a funny story where my, we didn't know this because, you know, we're just little kids, but we figured it out after the fact. When my dad, like, officially lost custody of us, he just went like, all right, everybody get in the car. Going for a drive. And we drove, like, to, like, St. Louis or something. So,
about halfway?
Yeah, about halfway. We're like, what are we doing?
Your mom, was she musical in her love? Did she listen to a lot of music?
My mom had what I thought at the time was the worst musical taste in the world. Some of it, in hindsight, not so bad. But she would do this thing, like she bought this Anne Murray record. There was like one, whatever the hit was at that moment. And she would just play it over and over and over. But if it wasn't Anne Murray, it would be like, you know, stuff that like now I can appreciate, like James Taylor and Fleetwood Mac and stuff like that. But no, we got more of the music stuff from my dad. My dad had kind of hip taste.
Hip as in rock metal type
no,
taste?
No, not at all.
Or like hip, R&B?
Like this is the Beatles. This is Bob Dylan.
Got it.
You know, even like, you know, when I was in the 70s, I remember him listening. He would listen to like almost nothing but Stevie Wonder and Bob Marley. And stuff that we weren't, you know, like I'm not going to pretend that I liked those records necessarily, but right. But it was on in the house and, you know, it just kind of seeped in. And it's stuff that you grow up a little bit and you go, oh, wow, that was better than, you know, the Wasp records we were listening to or whatever.
Is your oldest brother's interest in how good he got at guitar, is he the reason that your other brother and yourself are in music or were in music?
Did it start? Yeah, oh, pretty much. I mean, it all started with him. He was the first one that got a turntable and got some vinyl and, you know, and we all got hooked.
So what's his deal? Was he a good artist? Does he still play? Is he alive still?
He's going. He's a guitar teacher at the shop, Jensen Music, in Santa Barbara that we all grew up taking lessons from.
Man, that's how you know he's good.
I know. And when he got, I mean, he's done that for a long time now, but God, man, being a guitar teacher made him like a million times better, and he was already real good.
It's like studio, like session players here in town, because there are guitar players or instrumentalists, whatever, and they go on the road, they play all the big shows, and it's like, oh, cool, you play guitar for him. And then you meet somebody who's like, yeah, I'm a studio session player. Oh, you're good.
Right.
Like, yeah. there's a real difference in, and no offense to you, because you're obviously awesome, but I'm saying these technical guys who can look at a chart here in Nashville and go, all right, I'm going to do 3 sessions today. We're going to walk into this one. Got it. All right. But it's crazy.
Oh, yeah. No, I know, because some of those cats have played on my records, and yeah, it's humbling, to say the least.
What about writing? Because obviously you've written songs in all capacities. But now for this project, did you write different? And that's really not a good question, but sonically it's a bit different. You say you're challenged. The writing side of it, same feeling?
Yeah, well, a lot of these songs were written during the lockdown, so it was just a strange moment in, you know, in life. It's probably about 50-50 in songs that were co-writes with other people. And even that was a little bit different and kind of weird because you're doing it over Zoom. You're not just like sitting in a room with your friends. But just the writing process for me, probably not much different. But the process of making the record was very different. It was over time. So once we got to the end, because we recorded in 3 different sessions, once we got to that last session, it was sort of clear, like the kind of the elements that needed to be there that weren't there yet. And that's what we were kind of aiming for. So we're sort of going through. I'm sending Jaron little home demos and stuff and trying to figure out, you know, what songs we should jump in there and record.
Why here, though? I mean, obviously Jared John, but why here? Why Nashville? Why are you basing this whole thing here?
Well, I made my last couple records before this out here as well. And, you know, if you're making, like, kind of roots Americana country-tinged music, can't really go wrong making it in Nashville, you know.
Isn't your podcast based like Americana country?
Yeah,
or maybe
yeah.
Maybe not country
less,
so much.
Kind of less so now, but like yeah, that's been the main focus of it.
Who are your musical? I don't want to say heroes because when people ask me that question, I tend to answer a lot cooler than I really feel. So I'm going to say, who do you listen to a lot? Even now, and it can be old music, because a lot of the stuff I listen to is just stuff I loved 10, 15 years ago, especially when I'm trying to relax.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a big new music guy whenever I'm just trying to chill.
Sure.
Who over the past 25 years will you still put on and just go like, man, this is some good music. I'm just going to drive somewhere.
Yeah. 25 years. Well, like that first Sun Volt record is a huge one for me, you know, and when that came out, that was really like, that record was one of my big introductions into, like, you know, back then I think it was just called alt country, but what, you know, mm-hmm. what we all know is Americana, or however you want to look at it. That one never gets old to me. Especially, I mean, I just have like these vivid memories because it was really the singer in my old band, Tony Sly, was the singer of this band, No Use for a Name, that I was in.
And he was into all that stuff, you know, and he would always bring an acoustic guitar on tour. And so we'd be driving down the road in our van and he'd be sitting there, you know, strumming Sun Volt songs and Whiskey Town songs and, you know, the Wilco songs.
Like Wilco, I was going to
Tupelo and all that, you know, all that stuff. He's the one that turned me on all that. And then through that, I found, you know, whatever, Steve Earle and Lucinda Williams and even, you know, Merle Haggard and Buck and all the, you know, I just kind of worked my way back.
I was just about to go to Wilco when you said it.
Yeah.
I had it queued up.
Well, those first couple, you know, the first couple Sun Volt records, first couple Wilco records, just, yeah, I could never get enough of those records.
What about as a kid? What did you love at 16 years old?
Ooh, 16. Well, okay. So I, when, you know, when I first started going to shows, I mean, I was listening pretty much just like heavy metal was what the music of the day. And then there was this change that happened where around like 84, the glam rock thing started cooking up in LA. And there was a band from Europe called Hanoi Rocks.
Yeah, I know who that is, yeah.
Yeah, and so I got turned on to Hanoi Rocks right at the end of them being a band, because they had made a bunch of records, but then they put out their major label record. The drummer dies, and the whole thing falls apart. But as that was all kind of happening, my brother brought home that last record, and then, you know, like with everything else, you just sort of work your way back and get the other ones. But that record had a massive impact on the LA rock world, and all these bands started coming up, bubbling up, like, you know, Guns N' Roses and Poison and Jet Boy, who's from up north, and Faster Pussycat and LA Guns, and that whole thing. And this was like pretty early in that, like probably like 85-ish, started to go see those bands. And it really was like, so I was in around like 14, 15, 16, those years. As that whole thing was kicking off, we were just going down. It just seemed, my memory is we were just going down to LA all the time to go see those bands, like the Troubadour. And
at 16, the country.
Oh, yeah. No, I started going to shows when I was about 12 or so. And then, and I look back on it as a parent now, like, did my mom allow this to happen?
And how did you get
but
in?
We would go, and even before that, I was going down to see, like, you know, Keel and Armored Saint, all that kind of stuff. Because they were all ages shows. All the shows were all ages shows. And then maybe somewhere in the middle of all that, in really kind of like in high school, like where I grew up was just far enough away that there was no like rock and roll scene, really. And so if you were going to see live music, it was punk rock or it was thrash metal or something like that, you know, or some like weirdo college band at UCSB. And so it was this cool, that time was just cool because it was all this mix of music happening and, you know, you're sort of getting turned on to all this different stuff. And like me and I had this little tight group of friends and we were into this thing that was happening in LA that eventually became very mainstream. But at that moment, you know, there was like a couple of years there where it felt like it was like our little secret. You know what I mean?
Your mom obviously didn't throw a fit, or she didn't know you were going to these shows. But do you think it's because you had two older brothers blocking for you?
100%. Yeah. She was broken by the time I came along. She'd given up.
And did you guys ever, because the age, if you were, your oldest brother's how much older than you?
He's about 7 years older.
Okay, and your middle brother would be how
about
much older?
About five, yeah.
Okay, that's significant in age, but did you guys ever bond as brothers and have real true brother moments over music?
Oh, for sure.
Where you were all cool with each other?
Yeah, oh, yeah, tons. But sort of as we, you know, as each one of us got to a certain age, you know, when I was a kid, just whatever my brothers thought was cool, I thought was cool.
But would he ever think you were cool at 15 and be like, hey, 15-year-old, come with me, I'm 22, and our other brother's 17, let's get in the car and go to a show?
That probably never happened. I mean, maybe here and there, maybe more so me and my brother Scott, because me and my brother Scott also, like, you know, played in bands together and stuff, like, you know, like lived in L.A. together. And so there's probably a little bit more of that with him. But, yeah, no, we all kind of broke off and had our kind of specific musical interests once we got to a certain age, you know. And it is a funny thing because, like, I learned so much about playing from my brothers, but we probably never sat down and had them go, like, okay, here's how this lick goes. It was just kind of osmosis. It was just being in the room.
Were you ever good enough to where the older brother would go, hey, that's pretty good, kid?
Not when I was a teenager. No.
You
know what I did? I did a few years ago. We were making a Foo Fighter documentary, and I went back and found all the old,
like footage of my high school bands that I could get my hands on, you know, like the drummer in my band that played the ninth grade talent show. I had a video of that. And then, you know, another person had a video of this and that. And so I wound up cobbling together my ninth grade talent show, this club gig when I was in maybe 10th grade, and then a gig when I was a senior, or when I would have been a senior. And so it's just really over the course of like 4 years. And it's wild to see. It's like the first one, you can't even tell what we're doing. It's we're playing Kiss songs. It just sounds like it's madness. Nobody's playing the same thing, you know, just total chaos. The second one, it's like songs, but it's really stiff and janky and not very together. And I'm trying to play guitar solos and it's not really working, you know what I mean? And then by like that third one, we're like kind of shredding, you know? Like it's like you could see the evolution of just like, because it was all we did, it was just play. You know, we were either playing keg parties or, you know, bar gigs once we could sort of start to get them, and or just rehearsing in my friend Luke's garage. Or we just played all the time, you know?
And the more you played, obviously, the better you got.
Yeah.
And the more you played. I mean, it's like the Beatles in Germany, and they play clubs for 12 hours a night. Yeah, of course they got great.
Yeah.
They had to, or they wouldn't have been able to survive. They had to learn everything.
You evolve really fast, and then you just kind of hold steady for the next 40 years.
You, and Rat Pack, did you play bass?
I did play bass in Rat Pack.
Bass in a punk band, is it considered punk? Would you consider that punk?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The edges blur for me a bit.
Sure.
Through punk and thrash and
well,
metal
especially,
and,
you know, I mean, at that moment in time in punk rock, like you know, Rat Pack was like a local punk rock band in Santa Barbara where I was at, but like they were also listening to Guns N' Roses and stuff. So you get a little bit of that. Nobody wants to admit that now, but there was a lot of crossover.
What's a bass player? What's the common thread in a bass player in a punk band and a guitar player in a rock band? Because I feel like
overplaying. I remember the guitar player in Rat Pack one time, and I was like, yeah, I was probably like 16, so I didn't and wasn't really a bass player. But I remember at rehearsal him stopping us in the middle of the song. He was like, "Dude, quit playing lead bass. It's not lead bass. It's just bass. Just stop."
That's funny.
Yeah.
Did you take to bass pretty easily from playing guitar at the house? I mean, you're a kid. But
nah, I play bass like a guitar player. My brother plays bass like a bass player. It's a different thing.
I tried to play bass a little bit, and again, I'm not. I mean, I'm close to as good as you, but not really. But not at all. But it feels like I'm walking with different legs to get to the same destination. It's like, because, you know, with the guitar, especially if it's like a rhythm guitar. But bass, it's like I'm having to play notes in places where I never even heard the note to begin with, and I'm setting things up. I'm building like tables for other notes to sit on. I'm like, this is way too smart for me.
Yeah, I think like when I'm playing bass on like my own little demo or something, I always try to play like it's like one of those real like less is more kind of instruments. Guitar player, you can kind of be clacking around, floating above everything else and making a racket. But the bass, I don't know.
I
guess it depends on the genre too, but it's like for most of the stuff that I'm doing, I'm trying to like not just kind of like not fill every little nook and cranny.
I'm music illiterate and I need to prove myself, so I'm trying to fill everything. I'm trying to fill every nook and cranny.
There you go.
But when I played Longview the first time, I was like, I'm good. I'll put it down after Green Day. Boom, 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 boom. And I was like, I'm good. I'm good at bass. I just mastered it. I'm good
there
to
you go.
Yeah. So Guns N' Roses, obviously, massive. Just in general in the 80s. And there was a story that I read about a friend of yours. Did he go and audition for Guns N' Roses or tell you you should?
No, my buddy, it's funny because that thing, I should have never told that story in an interview.
Because it didn't even make sense when I read it.
Well, yeah, so it's this funny thing that's become like a internet rumor that has
stuck
to me.
Set it straight right now. This
is it. I know, but so, okay, here's the straight. I was never in Guns N' Roses. I never auditioned for Guns N' Roses. Guns N' Roses never asked me to join their band. None of that ever happened. What it was a friend of mine mentioned one day, said, hey, dude, I think I could get you an audition for Guns N' Roses. And this was in 99. So this is right about the time when I joined Foo Fighters, right? And in that conversation, I said to him, hey, I heard Foo Fighters are looking for a guitar player. See if you know. And he said, oh, I know somebody that works with them, whatever. And he actually did wind up getting my name thrown in the hat when they were having auditions. So that's how I wound up auditioning for Foos. But But that was the, like, and my buddy Bill, he didn't work for Guns N' Roses. There was no official anything. And that was at a time when Guns N' Roses wasn't even Guns N' Roses. It was like Axl and you know, it's like none of the original guys were in it besides Axl. So, yeah, let's just put that to bed right now. I never played in Guns N' Roses, and I would have gladly played in Guns N' Roses had anybody ever asked, especially if it was like 1987, you know what I mean? And I was also never a professional soccer player. That's another one of those weird internet rumors that...
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Yeah, that one's following me around. I wish I had been a professional soccer player. That would have been great.
I'd like to clear up a couple things myself.
Yeah.
I was never an astronaut.
That's right. I was never a brain surgeon.
I don't have a massive wiener that people have heard about. It's not
well,
true.
Well, that's...
You're going to keep quiet on that one?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
all right, good.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Biggest crowd that you guys have ever played in front of?
I don't know. I remember, and this was a long time ago, we played Rock in Rio 2000 or
so. I'm assuming that's in Rio.
Yeah, that's in Rio.
Okay.
Well, it's funny you asked because they also did Rock in Rio in like Lisbon, but which wasn't in Rio. But Rock in Rio actually in Rio. And I remember... At the time, maybe somebody said it was like 100,000 or a couple 100,000 people. It was big. And
get more nervous.
It's got to be still up there. No, you get less nervous for that.
Yeah.
You get less nervous for that because it's so big. It's just like you can't even see people's faces.
What about your shows now?
Way more nerve-wracking, especially if they're sparsely attended. Those are the most nerve-wracking of all.
Do you watch people's faces?
I have a bad habit of when it's my solo thing of like getting distracted by watching people's faces, especially if like somebody's like looking at their phone.
But what if you're singing?
Or somebody's like,
I'm talking about your show only.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
no.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I still, and somebody's like looking at their phone and like elbowing their friend and they're laughing and all of a sudden I start to think about like, what's that guy doing? And then I forget the verse that we're in, you know what I mean? Yeah. I gotta figure out how to just tune the crowd out, but stay connected, but tune them out.
I drive myself crazy because if I can't assign my feelings onto other people. And I've even been to therapy where I will go out and I'll do a theater of a couple thousand people. I'll be doing telling jokes, rocking it. If I see one person that looks like they're tired or yawn,
yep,
or get up, and it's a theater, so it's not really the environment where people get up, but if they get up, I'm like, God, I'm a suck.
Totally.
And so
isn't that the weirdest thing with performing? Like, it's so easy to misjudge a crowd.
And because I've assigned what I think on them.
Right.
Well, if they're yawning, they must be like me. And when I yawn, I'm bored.
Right.
They may have a yawn disease. What do I know? The old classic yawn disease.
Right.
And so what I would talk to my therapist about it. She goes, but let me get this straight. There's, I don't know, 2,000 other people there having a great time.
Yeah.
Laughing their butts off. But you see one person in the third row that's like talking to their buddy, and that's the thing that triggers you to go, maybe I'm not good enough.
Plus, you immediately assume that the thing that they're talking about is something negative about you. That's the insane
Absolutely.
Part. Yeah.
It's like if two people are whispering around you, you're like, oh, for sure they're talking about me.
Yeah.
They probably heard that big penis rumor, and now it's, they know it's not true because I had revealed it. And then here we are.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, 9 times out of 10 when you actually encounter, because I've had that happen where the person you in the crowd that you think is not enjoying themselves, you'd like talk to them after the show, and they're like, dude, that was the best.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have completely, and you, and I always got to remind myself, like, when I'm at a show, I'm not like in the front row dancing and going, you know what I mean? It's like, you know.
I try to watch foreheads.
Yeah.
That is now what I try to do. I only look at foreheads and listen back.
I tell you what, dude, having played in like punk rock bands in my younger years, it ruins your ability to judge a crowd forever, because the bar was, if there wasn't a big pit, it wasn't a good show. And so you get conditioned, and I will never be unconditioned to that. That like the crowd has to be going insane.
Yeah.
For it to register is a good thing. And I always have to remember, especially with like with my solo stuff that like runs way mellower than punk rock, you know, even though a lot of it's like rocking, it's not that kind of rocking. You know what I mean? It's and
they're gonna be moshing at the Ryman.
No.
Let's just assign that. Yeah, like, you're not gonna be sad when they're not,
and like they're in seats and stuff. So it's just not it would be genre inappropriate.
Was it ever dangerous for you playing in punk bands that young? Because I would be scared to go. Mike is a huge punk guy, goes to show still, and it's like he's very valuable to me. He's like my main guy, yet he's in there freaking getting his neck broken. Like you, I don't understand. Like I just feel like you would get hurt too. Like you're diving on drums, spitting in people's mouths.
Like, I don't think anybody ever actually spit in my mouth, but yeah, I'm like, I remember one time, and this didn't really seem like scary, but you do have moments like this, like where we were on tour. I was on tour with No Use for a Name, and we were in somewhere in Spain. And we were playing, and the crowd was really like going bananas, and it was packed club, and there was like all the bouncers were lined up across the front of the stage, and they were really manhandling the kids. And so we got on our high horse, and we're like, "Man, get the F out of here, and you guys bail." And all the bouncers just kind of went like, "All right," and they all left. And then we started playing the next song, and it was just a complete stage invasion, like totally insane.
Come
sorry guys. Okay, you were doing something after all. I get it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've seen stuff like that. I remember touring with Unwritten Lawns, and we were down when I was playing a band called 22 Jacks. And there was, if I remember correctly, there was some the bouncers were being pretty rough, and one of them was standing like in the middle of the stage, like not like crouched down, but like in the middle of the stage while Unwritten Law was playing. And Scott, the singer for Unwritten Law, just kicked him in the ass into the crowd. And it was like, that time I was scared because the bouncers wanted to kill everybody at that point. I think
Bold move.
I think we had to sneak him out of there in our van.
Lost at Sea, the record itself. So, I don't know, whenever you go and you play these shows and now you're having, and you've been doing versions of this for a long time, right? Yep. So it's not like this. You're just going, I'm a solo artist now for my first time.
Yep.
You have different kind of incarnations of who you are. This, to me, is the first project like this that's just you. You can tell me I'm wrong. Am I wrong? I feel like this is the most, from what I've heard of this, it's different sonically, and it feels like a way different you than I've heard through other versions.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'd say that's fair.
Okay, so Lost at Sea, you're playing these songs. Are you playing, I don't know, mostly songs from the new record? Are you playing any of the other versions? I don't know what you do.
I think it depends on, you know, like if we're supporting somebody else and we have a shorter set.
Blackberry Smoke, for example, when you're opening for them, you'll
like
play
three songs off the new record.
Okay.
I think, yeah. It's so two of which nobody will have ever heard.
And then what else?
And then songs from my last couple records. Got and then it. I put out a couple songs just on my own last summer, so I'll probably play one or two of those, you know.
That's a question, so like how that. You juggle that, especially when you're kind of not rebranding, but just showing a different part of who you are musically.
Sure. Yeah, it's it can be challenging to try to, like, you know, because you want to just get up there and play everything, but you gotta trim it down.
Well, you do double time and get double the songs in.
There you go.
No ballads.
That's
it's
right.
Just faster, slow
indeed.
Songs.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, we'll just set the, you know, the click track a little faster.
Mike, I know you're a big fan. What's the deal here with you?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up on Fat Records, so No Use for a Name, Me First and the Gimme Gimme's were my favorite bands growing up. I think the thing I loved about Me First was punk rock supergroup. Guys did amazing covers. If you could form a supergroup now, like with some of your peers, who would be in that band and what kind of songs would you cover?
Oh, man. Who would be in it now? Does it, God, I don't know. That's a tough one. Because Me First and the Gimmies just kind of fell together. It was just like the, you know, me and Joey were living in San Francisco at that time. We had just moved up there. Spike was working at Fat Records. Dave was living there because he was still in RKL at the time. And, you know, of course, Mike, you know, owns Fat Records. So he was there. So it just kind of came together without like any real planning. But I always thought it would be cool to make, like, to corral a bunch of folks from out here and do a really super badass, like, classic country cover band and go play parties. But there must be like 100 people that already do that. So I don't
know.
But I've never done that.
Yes.
That would be fun for me.
But not, yes and no. The answer is yes, people do that. But not people that are superior, at least with accolades.
I'm inferior.
Well, okay. You can say that.
That's why I need a bunch of really good players to come make it sound really good. But like, how cool would that be to take like everybody that played on my new record and go just play like, you know, just a classic country cover set somewhere.
I think it'd be super cool.
So fun.
That, yeah.
I think it'd be
super cool. Love it.
Give me the analogy here. I'll set you up. I had a show on Nat Geo for a while on a small-ish budget, and we had fine catering, and it was fine. You know, we go out. We're all over the country on location. Fine. We had good crew. Fine. American Idol, network, best food, money's awesome. Just a lot more time. But there's a difference in the two. When you're doing you versus foo, I'm assuming that's probably similar.
Well, if you need a visual, send your camera crew to the Airbnb I'm staying at right now. And that will clearly illustrate the difference. And if that doesn't make it clear enough, I'll drive you around in my van that we tour in as well.
Is it A+? Because I've said it before, not just here. You're here. I think Foo Fighters are the greatest American living band right now. Period. Just
thank you.
Because two things: one, three, lots of hits, still relevant, and the length of amount that the time you guys have been relevant, meaning you're talking about decades, and yeah, you know, I did an alternative based show for a long time, and to me, Foo Fighters are extremely well respected and regarded and accoladed, but still the most underappreciated band, one of them in music history. And I think
underappreciated, really. Absolutely, I feel like we're appreciated
very much. So you can be, but you can also be overrated and be awesome. Not Foo Fighters, but I'm saying you can be like, wow, that person's overrated, and they can still score 35 a game and get 9 rebounds. But the point is, I think because of a couple of things, you guys do not get the actual appreciation you deserve like some of the absolute greats of all time. I don't think you're great versus everybody. Now, I think you're great versus everybody ever at the duration of success, the hits you keep putting in, the relevance now. You put out a new record now, it's still, boom, goes up.
I tell you, when you talk about the duration, it is funny because somebody posted on my Twitter feed the other day. I don't even know when this, I think it was pretty early in me being in the band. It must have been like the first tour. Some live clip, and it just, you just look at it and you're like, oh my God, we're like babies.
Who, yeah.
You know?
What year was that, you think?
Well, I mean, I joined the band in 99, so it was probably like a clip from like 2000 or so. I don't know. And like, I'm wearing like sleeveless. The thing that jumped out at me was I had a cutoff sleeve t-shirt, which dates it from quite, because I can't imagine I would be doing that anytime recently. But
remove Foo Fighters from the conversation. Just me and you talking about music.
Yeah.
Remove Foo Fighters. Name another American band that's got 25, 30 years of absolute greatness. Just period. It can be from any time. What do you do? Who do you put there?
No,
the Eagles?
I mean, you know, you gotta appreciate it, you know? It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, you know, when you're like in it and living it day to day, you sort of, you know, I think one of the hardest things in life is to sort of be in the moment and appreciate it as it's all happening. And it's like you never really do. But when you look back over the length of time, you just look at, like, exactly what I'm saying. Like, I look at that video footage. Dude, that was like several lifetimes ago. You know, I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. You know, my son's in college now. Mm. It's like, it's literally a long stretch.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
When we look back at songs that you've written, and they all come to my head, and, you know, music, for me, if I hear a song that was a big part of my life at a certain point, I automatically kind of feel like that pointing in, even for just a second. It's one of the cool things music, or even smells of, like, old food does. Like, oh, my grandma used to cook that. Okay, I kind of feel that. But it's like, all my life. So you're one of the writers on the song, right? Like, you're a writer on All My Life?
I mean, you know, that's
is that it?
I'm not gonna claim writing, like, you know,
aren't
like,
you? But like, aren't you on the? You're on the.
Where? Well, yeah, I'm on that record, but like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's Dave's riff, man.
No, okay, I'm not talking about the riff. I just mean the song in general. But you're
we all played on it, but you know what I mean.
So, yeah. But you're not. Do you get publishing for it?
We're getting into the weeds. Yes.
Okay. Great. So,
but that said, like, I'm, you know, like, Dave is very much the writer, and it has always led the sort of creative vision of the band, you know.
I wasn't saying he wasn't. I just think of these songs, and I was looking at through the notes what your names were on the publishing, so I just assume, oh, if he's on the publishing, he for sure is, you know, one of the writers there. Do you, when you guys write? And I really don't have that many Foo Fighter questions, but you just put me onto another one. When you guys write, do you guys get in a room and just, if you write, do it together? Or does he come in? Or do you come in? Or is it different every time?
It's changed here and there over the years, you know. And in the past, maybe we would spend more time, like, he would make, like, record some demos, then we would learn the songs, and maybe we'd demo them, and then get into the studio. And then there's been times where, you know, he just brings them in. We learn them in the studio and kind of piece them together as we're going. So it's kind of a little bit of everything.
Do you write?
No. I used to get really hung up on demos, you know.
In what way?
Well, like what you know, how,
like,
the demo went.
Fall in love with a demo?
Yeah, and like, you know, and that was the part I played on the demo. And I really tried it. It's like I almost try to prepare less now to be more sort of responsive.
And so you're not attached, maybe. If you prepare less, that means you're not as married to that.
The first time I ever sort of learned that was coming out here and making a record with Dave Cobb, which is, well, like, even in that, before I came out here for the first record I made with him, he was like, don't make demos. And I did anyway. I made like a bunch of demos.
But then what's he want, a work tape? I mean, then just record it in the iPhone, the general rough?
I think he would prefer you to just sing it in the room on an acoustic guitar and then,
no, but
and
I'm
then
saying,
get going. You
yes.
Know?
But what if you write it's not here? I guess is my point. You say don't make demos.
Yeah.
What? Because I like that, and I like what you just said there. Because you can definitely fall in love with the demo, and then anything that comes after, you're just like, I don't know. It's not really what I felt when I wrote this original.
Yeah.
But
it's way more fun to be open to it, just kind of getting banged into something different when you're in the room.
So if you write now, will you just write something and record it on your iPhone, like in a voice note?
Yeah, and then, you know, to truth be told, I'll still go make a demo of it in my studio, but I try not to get stuck on it. That's the lesson.
Do your kids think you're cool?
Not to my face.
Do you ever hear, though, and it makes you proud that they've told somebody and they're proud of you, but they won't tell you, but it comes back to you they are?
Yeah, I don't know if it's ever come back to me exactly. you know, my kids are great. I think, like, they've grown up with a, you know, they've grown up with a dad who has a really weird job, you know, and so they've been around that their whole lives, and I think it's totally demystified. Mm-hmm. Like if my dad had been in, you know, heart or something, you know, then I wouldn't have wondered all the things that I wondered about what happens on the other side of the, you know, backstage door or whatever. So, you know, I think it's an interesting thing. Like, I think my kids definitely appreciate the fact that I get to lead this weird life and they get to, you know, lead a weird life because of it.
They musical?
I've forced them all to take lessons here
and
there.
Any of them have a passion to do it for their life?
My youngest has gotten really kind of into it now. Yeah, they all quit playing. My oldest wants to be a filmmaker. So, you know, that's his thing. That's his passion. And then my, you know, they all played, but my youngest has now kind of come back to it. So we'll see.
Do you ever practice?
Do I? Oh, God, yeah, all the time. And not so much in terms of, like, practicing. I don't sit there, like, I might sit there and kind of woodshed on something specific. But, I mean, I just play all the time.
Do you still love to play?
I still love to play.
Are you ever like, I just wish I had a guitar right now?
All the time, yeah.
And isn't that, if you can remove yourself from you, which is a hard thing to do, isn't that kind of awesome? That
totally.
Somebody who's done it through all different levels and stages and seasons of life, like, still has that thing that they've done and they still love doing. It's so rare. I'm thankful that I get to do what I do and still love doing it, even though it's a grind sometimes.
Yeah.
Are you thankful that you still love it?
Totally. Yeah, because there was one point that I remember, and it was a long time ago now, where I was kind of like not playing that much in the off season and not doing much, you know? And then a series of things happened that kind of like reignited that feeling in me. And I just never, ever want to lose it again. And I know for me, like, even when you're not feeling like particularly motivated or whatever, I just play through it. I just play. But it's almost at this point, like, that never happens, because either you're writing or recording or rehearsing or just sitting in my studio messing around with amps and pedals and different guitars and stuff. It's just always something.
Are you on an eternal search for the right tone?
Probably more so now than ever. Yeah.
And do you know it when you hit it, or do you still question it even though you got it?
I think you hit it and then you lose it and then you start looking for it again, or what that is changes. Or you hear somebody else and you're like, whoa, how did he do that? You know?
Why is the record called Lost to Sea?
It's a part of a line in one of the songs. Yeah.
Any lines in these songs that are super personal? Because I did see a thing where you're like, it's a very personal record. And I like that, right? Everybody's trying to write personal stuff because that's what we have that's different than everybody else.
Yeah.
But is there anything, a line or anything that's in there that's like, man, this is like real personal and like, I don't know if I should even put that out there.
Yeah, there's a couple. There's one of the songs.
You don't even have to highlight it now. I just wonder if that's ever a question.
Yeah, no, there's a song on there that I wrote probably like, I don't even know, a long time ago when I was going through some stuff. It's funny because I don't think to anybody else would read it the way that I hear it.
Which is why I don't want to ask it is, but it's just, did you get in that place where you're like, man, this is something but good for you. I mean, you hung in there. Did you pull any out, though, in the same way that was?
No. You know, I mean, there are definitely, it's a funny thing with songwriting because, like, I like it the more specific it is. But then, you know, it's usually a lot of these songs wind up being like, it's like 10 different things that become one story. So the whole thing's kind of just fictional tale, but it's based on, you know, it's like every line is like from something that you experienced, you know what I mean? So it's like it's real and it's just a story at the same time.
The most country song that you've ever written is on this record?
I think so. There's a couple of them. There's one called Dead and Gone, and there's another one called Carrie Midnight Texas Queen.
It's a lot of words.
It's a lot of words.
Did you consider just Midnight or Texas Queen? It's a lot.
I know. Naming songs and naming records, it's always kind of challenging.
Do you write on the set list, Queen, Texas?
When we learn it, yeah. Now we're in that fun part where now I actually have to go in there and learn how to play my own songs.
Everybody, chrisschifflettmusic.com. Go to on Instagram, shifty71.
Indeed.
I saw that you're on TikTok now.
Yes.
Which, well, I mean, TikTok.
You talk about my kids thinking I'm cool. My kids roast me about my TikTok posts constantly.
You're not dancing.
They even roast me on there. Like,
but you're not dancing, though, right?
No dancing. Okay, good. No dancing. But they're just like, oh, my God, dads, please stop putting, like, the little, like, dancing cowboy boots or, like, the filter. Like, nobody does that. Like, well, I don't know. It's an option in there. It makes it look sparkly. What do you mean? Yeah. It looks like snow's falling. It's cool.
The record is out in October, but when this airs, Mike, just making sure we're all... Black Top White Lines will be out.
It'll be out.
That'll be out.
Yes.
Also, quickly, just want to just highlight a couple of songs real quick. Here is Long, Long Year. Here you go. It's been a long, long year, ain't it? And here is Born and Raised. Born and Raised. I was born and raised. I mean, I hear like a... 80s Eagles, like, because I love 80s. I mean, sure. That's the most complimentary way. Like, that's what makes me feel that feeling I get, where it's just like, ah, yeah.
It's funny because something like that is exactly kind of what I was alluding to earlier, where in my head, I'm hearing it like Steve Earle, but everybody else hears it like the Eagles. So it's cool either way to me.
What if I said, you know what, Chris, I hear the Wiggles. Okay, see, exactly. Yeah. All right, you guys, follow Chris. You're out on the road. But what are you doing on the road? I know you're here with Blackberry Smoke here, but are you with them all the time?
No, we're just it's a one-off. Okay. Yeah. I got offered to come out and play, open
are
up
you doing
for them.
Other one-offs?
Here and there. I just did a bunch of dates in December out on the West Coast, and then I've got a tour of the UK and Ireland coming up at the end of March. And we're working on trying to figure out some other stuff, but yeah.
Watch Foreheads. That's it. That's what I'm gonna leave you with.
Yeah.
That's I'm gonna leave you with a nugget.
That's right.
Because obviously I'm your hero. So watch Foreheads. You learned from me. This is a big deal for you to be here.
That's right.
And it's actually the opposite of all I just said. I was super pumped to have you. This has been a thrill for me. I hope you had a good time.
Oh, I've loved it.
We just did over an hour. Yeah. And love the music.
Yeah, thank you.
Love the music.
Thank you.
All right, there is Chris Shifley.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.